Great. Thanks, Alice. I was looking at the Message version of that passage before I started to prepare this. And it's really interesting. It doesn't actually translate all the elements of the armour. It actually says you'll need all the bits of the armour, make sure you use them. But then it says truth, righteousness, peace, faith and salvation are more than words. Learn how to apply them. You'll need them throughout your life. And one of the things that really excited me when the team first said they'd like me to do this was that they really wanted us to focus, all of us who are speaking in this series, on how we actually use the armour. Not just kind of what is it and get an intellectual understanding, but how do we actually put it into practice? How do we make our lives different because we apply, in this case, the shield of faith? So that's what we're going to spend most of our time doing. I'm going to share a few thoughts first, and then we're going to go through three different sections where I'll be sharing a thought and then getting you guys to respond either individually or in your groups. So firstly, I just want to talk a little bit about the shield. And I'm also going to move back slightly because I feel like I'm in front of half of you, which is a bit unnerving, and I will fall off the stool if I keep trying to turn around. So most of you will know that Paul writes this letter to the Ephesians while in prison, and it's quite easy to imagine that he's caught sight of a soldier at some point dressed in all his armour, and he uses that as his inspiration. So there's a lot of overlap as well between all the elements. I felt as I was preparing quite a lot of it, I would say, in other bits of the armour. So quite a lot of this is about truth and knowing who you are, who God is. But the shield itself was massive. The word that Paul uses is related to the word for door. And so Roman shields were huge and rectangular, not kind of little round ones or kind of the medieval pointy shaped ones that we might envisage. So it actually was big enough to cover most of the person, kind of the key bits, I guess, from knee to maybe shoulder height. And they'd have it held in front of them like that. They also used to soak them with water. So when Paul says that the shield is so that you can extinguish the flaming arrows of the enemy, that was practically a thing they actually did, cover it in water so that flaming arrows wouldn't set your shield alight. They often strengthened it with metal. You can probably picture there. Some of them had kind of metal discs in the middle or strips around the side to strengthen it and actually take the brunt. Quite a serious attack. You could resist it with your shield, and you could also give a good shove to your enemy and get them on the back foot. Anyone a physicist here? Anyone have any physics knowledge? Excellent. I won't make a complete idiot of myself then. But these shields were also curved, and I understand that would help deflect some of the force of the attack, so it wouldn't all go straight through the shield onto the person behind it, but some of the force would kind of dissipate around the curve, so you'd cut off some of the seriousness of the attack. But it's interesting, isn't it, in the passage that Paul doesn't, up to now he's been saying put on the belt and the helmet, but now he's saying take up the shield. So there's an element here that you actually have to raise your shield. Imagine going into battle with your shield strapped to your arm and your arm hanging by your side. It's going to do no good whatsoever. So part of this is learning how we raise our shields as we go in battle. So if that's the shield, what's the faith part? And I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with the Hebrews 11 verse at the beginning that says that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So faith is taking God at his word and being certain of it and allowing that to be your surety, your hope that will not give way. There's a huge element of trust. Paul says elsewhere, I think it's in Romans, that you don't hope for what you already have. If you've got something, you don't need to hope for it. You don't have to have faith for it. But actually, the faith is about what you don't see, what you don't currently have. And it's faith in the face of whatever the outcome of a situation might be. In Daniel 3, we read the story of the three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who you might be familiar with the story. The king has created this big gold idol, and he says, when the music plays, everyone has to fall down and worship this idol. Otherwise, you're going to go into the fiery furnace. And these guys know that God says, you don't build idols. I'm the only one that's worthy of worship. And they have faith in that. They believe who God is, and they believe that what he says is true. So they decide not to obey the king. And they get brought before the king, and he says, did you not bow down? And he said, they say, no, we only worship God. And they say to him, even if you throw us into the fire, our God is able to save us. And even if he doesn't, we want you to know that he is the God who is worthy of worship, and we will not bow down. So they have faith in the face of uncertainty of the outcome. They know God can save them. They don't know that he will, and yet they stand firm. I had reason recently in my job to look at some of the new material for the Alpha course. And I came across a little section that I'd not really seen before in any of their material. And it was a really helpful metaphor, an analogy, I guess, for something we talk about in church quite a lot, which is the fact that we live in the now and the not yet of the kingdom. So we know that Jesus has won the victory. We know that what he did on the cross and as he rose from the dead has made it so that the outcome is secure. His kingdom will one day reign forever, and there is nothing that anybody can do to stop that. And yet, when we live in the here and now, we don't always feel like that's true. We don't always see that that is reality. And they were using the analogy of the British summer that maybe will come one day. And they were saying, you know, those days you get in May or June, early June, where you kind of, it's suddenly really hot, really sunny. There's blue skies. Everyone gets their shorts out quickly and goes for a barbecue on the downs while the sun's out. And you think, oh, great, summer's arrived. This is it. And then a day or two, or maybe a week if we're lucky later, it's wet, it's cold, it's grey. And you think, oh, maybe summer's not here. But of course, summer's always going to be on the way. It's still true that summer is coming. But all of a sudden, you don't feel like it. And I think for me, faith is very like that. Sometimes you think this is a sunny day, and I can easily believe that God reigns and everything's okay. And then some days you think, oh, but actually it doesn't look like it at all at the moment. The sky's grey, it's raining, I'm fed up with this, and I don't know. It doesn't look like it anymore. And so these arrows of doubt or uncertainty or difficulty, those lies that come in and say, actually, maybe God's not who you thought he was. Or you'll never beat this, or you'll never get better at this. We need to learn how we raise our shields. Whether it looks sunny or whether it's wet and miserable, we need to be able to raise our shields. So this first section, interestingly, given what Chris has just shared, I had this phrase in my head as I was preparing, and this section is called Finding Your Refrain. And I think for me, there's something, like Chris was saying, about pushing through and singing the hard song or trusting in the verses that you're reading that is really key to raising our shield of faith. If faith is trusting who God is, we need to be sure of who he is. We need to be finding out who he is. Now, if you come to the five at the moment, we've just finished the series on Moses where we saw the over and over again, that encounter at the burning bush where Moses says, if they ask me who you are when I go to them, what are you going to say? And God says to him, I am who I am. So God reveals at that point his name, I am. And then if you look through the rest of scripture, that name gets added to as different facets of God's character get revealed. And I think it's really interesting how he doesn't give it all at once. I mean, he'd probably be there a long time if he was to say, Moses, this is who I am, and list them all off. But we see that he's the Lord who provides. He's the Lord who is peace, hope, the deliverer, the King of Kings, light. He's our refuge, our strong tower. So much of that stuff that we sang at the beginning. And then in the New Testament, we see that Jesus claims these things for himself as well. He says in John 8, before Abraham was, I am. So he was making it very clear to those listening that he was claiming to be God. He was the same God who encountered Moses in the burning bush. And you see so many other points that he uses that phrase, I am. It's not always translated helpfully in the NIV. Often it's things like, it is I, or it is he. But when he walks on the water and the disciples are really scared and think, who is it? He says, don't be afraid, I am. So again, it's that character of him saying, this is who I am. You do not need to be afraid. And through our lives, as well as the characters in Scripture, we experience different aspects of God's character depending on our situation. Whatever we need most in the situation, God reveals himself in that way. If we're unsettled, he is the God of peace to us. And in different seasons, I think we need to hold firm to different promises. They're all always true, of course, but for us in our different seasons, one or other might be more important to be key for our shield of faith that we're going to be raising. So I think we're going to spend some time in a minute just reflecting on our own with God about what season we're in and what we feel our refrain is at the moment. Now, your refrain could be different things. It might just be, it simply be scripture, direct verses from the Bible that encourage you to remember who God is and what he promises. Maybe you're more visual, and maybe actually some of the images in the Bible or some that God directly gives you will be more helpful. Think of things like the father and the prodigal son, or Jesus talks about God being the mother hen that gathers her chicks under her wing. Maybe that will really ground your faith in who God is for you. Maybe songs. We all know what it's like, don't we, to have a refrain of a song stuck in our heads. And that can be really frustrating and annoying. But actually, if it's truth that's going around in your head, what better thing to be singing? For those of you who've ever been to organic worship, which is a kind of spontaneous, improvised couple of hours of worship once a month, a lot of those are really short clips of songs made up on the spot often that can really help us grab hold of truth. The one in July, we ended up singing a verse from Psalm 73, which says, "My health may fail, my spirit may grow weak, but God remains the strength of my heart. He is mine forever." And in the couple of weeks following that, I really found that just that what we had been singing, though my spirit grows weak, you will remain the strength of my heart. Actually, I found that really helpful, and that kind of stuck in my head for the next 2 weeks. And sometimes I was singing that in a joyful, dancing behind my shield kind of way, going, "Yes, absolutely, God, you're the strength of my heart." And sometimes it was far more, "Oh God, my spirit's growing weak. You're the strength of my heart." So I think finding a refrain that can ground our faith in good times and in bad times is really important. So we're going to spend a bit of time doing that now. There are a couple of ways that I'm going to suggest we do that, depending on how you tend to work with God. You might just want to go for it on your own, no structure, just dive in with God, say, "Hey God, what do you think?" and have a conversation, see what he says. But you might need a bit of a starting point or a bit of structure. So in your groups, you should find some printed sheets with just a set of verses that I've pulled out of the Bible with various promises on. So do grab those and reflect on them and see if anything jumps out for you. And finally, if you are more visual and you want to reflect in that way, can I suggest you start by visualizing yourself in your mind holding a shield? And as you can see that in your mind, then ask God, in this season, what words or pictures are on my shield? And see what he says. So we're going to have maybe about 10 minutes to do this. Do spread out, find a bit of space if you need to. And ask God, what refrain do I need for the season that I'm in? So horrible breaking into these moments. If you feel like that's half a conversation that you've had with God, make a note to go back to it. Or if you really want to continue in this moment, that's absolutely fine as well. The act of finding our refrain, I think, is a really helpful discipline we can get into. Asking that question regularly, recognizing that actually our seasons can change really fast. But section two is called growing our shields. It moves from thinking individually to thinking together as group, how we grow our faith. And it's really important, I think, to build a history with God. But actually, as we grow in our faith, we learn how to notice and acknowledge and remember what God does in our lives. Because that's how we know what he's like. That's how we know what our God is like, because we read about him and we remember and notice and acknowledge the things that he does in our lives. We say quite often that testimony builds faith, and hearing what God does in each other's lives is a really key way to grasp things outside of our own experience. So we hear a story and think, oh, if God is like that for that person, he's unchanging, he's like that for me, and that can build our faith. I have to say, I've got quite an affinity for the epic. And I like films and things that have an epic nature and epic moments in them. And I often think that standing up with the shield of faith needs to be like a Gandalf kind of moment. You know, in that first film where he stands on the bridge against that creature of fire and flame and shadow, whatever they call it. Balrog, thank you, Isaac, good work. And he stands on that bridge and he says that really famous line, "You shall not pass." And I often think, yes, that's the kind of moment I want with my shield, standing there firm, going, "You shall not pass." But actually, that's only half the picture. Sometimes it might be like that. You might have moments of testimony that is absolutely you standing there against this massive enemy and being certain and really able to stand up strongly. But there's another type of moment, I think, with our shields, that moment of slight desperation and kind of huddling under your shield. And I have a feeling there's a scene in one of the Marvel movies that has Captain America in it, but I didn't have time to rewatch them all to work out which one and where it was, and I couldn't easily find it. But I'm sure there's a moment where someone's about to get hit by some kind of projectile, and Captain America kind of dives across with his shield and he huddles underneath, protecting this person with the shield over the top. And of course, the shield saves them all. Wonderful. Does that sound familiar to anyone else? It sounds likely, at least, I guess. But that sort of moment, I think, is part of our experience as well. We're not on our feet standing strong, we're actually kind of on the floor in a bit of a heap, but we managed to get the shield just about over our heads. And in a minute, we're going to have some time in our groups where we're sharing testimony of who God is and what he's like, what experiences we've had with him that will bolster the faith of the others in our group. And I was just going to kick us off with a quick one. If you have been part of the evening gathering for a while, you might have heard it before. I shared it, I guess, maybe about a year ago. I've got a problem with my shoulder at the moment. It's quite a long-standing problem, so I've been having lots of tests. And at one point, I had to go for an MRI scan. Anyone else had an MRI scan? Yes, a few people. And you kind of basically, you're lying on this trolley and you kind of get put into this great big tube. And it's pretty small. And I didn't think I was claustrophobic, but turns out maybe I am a bit. I went in and they started putting me in. And I can only describe it as sheer panic. I'd never felt anything like it, anything as strong as it ever before. And it kind of started in my feet and just seemed to rise up. And it was like, you can't cope with this. This is not going to happen. What? Ah. And I'd love it to be able to say it was an epic moment where I said, yes, well, I've got my Bible verses saying, yes, I can do it. I can do all things through Christ. It wasn't like that at all. All I managed was a kind of a half-strangled, Jesus, please. Out loud. I thought it was in my head, but apparently it was out loud. Awkward. And I got brought back out again, and this nurse who'd put me in, bless her, started talking to me and sort of saying, well, you don't have, we're not going to force you to have this test. And I was thinking, well, yeah, but I've come a long way and it's taken a while to get the injection in and all this. I thought, well, I need to try. And she was saying, well, the test is a series of scans, 5 minutes each. There's seven of them. So, and I'm thinking, nearly 40 minutes in this machine. I can't do that. And she said, well, we could put you in for one and then you could come out and then you could go back in. And I just thought, is that going to be worse going out knowing you've got to go back in again? So I was like, right, well, I've come a long way. Let's try it. And I went in the second time and there was absolutely nothing. no feeling of panic, no dislike. I thought I'd have to have my eyes shut the whole way because the top of the machine is so close to you. Nope, eyes open, everything. And it was absolutely fine. And there's no way to explain that other than we have a God of peace who hears our cries. But it wasn't a Gandalf moment. It wasn't epic. It was huddled on the thing going, no! So when you're sharing testimony, don't think it has to be that epic moment that, you know, you come out all covered in glory because you got it right and knew exactly the right Bible verse. Sometimes it's the panic, desperation cry that then God reveals who he is in the midst of that. So in our groups, we're going to just have a few minutes to share encouraging testimony, small, big, whatever, to encourage us in our faith. So gather in your groups and go.
Still in your hands, this is my confidence. You never fail. soften my heart and break me apart. I need you to open my eyes and see that you're shaping my of eternal promise, stirring in your sons and daughters, earth revealing heaven's wonder.
Okay, let's start drawing those stories just to a close. Okay. The end of my MRI testimony that I didn't say earlier was that But a couple of days later, I was reminded of a verse from the Bible that had actually been my verse for the year before. And it's from Isaiah 41, and it says, "For I am the Lord your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you." And for some reason, I looked it up in the Message that day, and it actually says, "Do not panic, I'm right here beside you." And that was a really good moment for me to remember how these two first sections that we've been looking at, finding your refrain and then growing your shield, link together. That so often our experience, God then ties it together to his truth. So actually it goes hand in hand. You know, sometimes you experience things and you think, actually, is that God? Is that really true? But actually he ties it then to something in his word that gives us confidence that this is something that we can stand on. And so our final section tonight has the slightly amusing name of the power of the tortoise. So there might be some among you who are Roman armor enthusiasts. And you might have been thinking earlier when I was talking about what the shield was like, that I'd missed the most exciting bit about the shield. Because they had quite a cool thing they did with their shields. They could kind of fit together really well, side by side. And when they went into battle, they would often have a row of soldiers with their shields raised, all linked together. And then down the sides, the soldiers would have their shields linked together. And then the guys in the middle would hold them over their heads, again, linked together. So you had this kind of, almost like a tank, I guess, made up of people moving forwards that could not only come up against people coming at them from the ground, but also were protecting each other from arrows coming from above. And it made me think about how sometimes you're in a season where it's really hard to lift your shield. You wouldn't say that you'd lost your faith necessarily, but actually you're just feeling it. You still believe them, but you can't actually, whether you're physically unable to lift it, whether you're kind of emotionally a bit battered or spiritually maybe you're a bit under the weather and you feel like actually just trying to lift the shield is just too much for me. And I thought about a community like this, where we're surrounded by people who have shields of their own. It's really key that we look out for each other and that we use our shields to protect one another. When we can't lift our shield for ourselves, that there are others that come around us who can do it on our behalf. Sometimes it's a specific situation that we're struggling with. We can't believe that God would really act in this situation, that he couldn't possibly bring peace to that in our lives. Maybe sometimes it's just a more general sense that you just can't lift this shield. And we often talk about it in our gatherings, I think, during sung worship. There's so often moments where we're pressing into a certain issue. Maybe it's peace, and we're wanting people who need peace to be ministered to by the Spirit. And so often the worship leader or the service leader will encourage those around who don't feel like they're struggling to find God's peace, to know God's peace, to gather around people and to maybe keep singing the refrain that we're using on their behalf and covering them with that. And so what I want us to do tonight is to end by praying in our groups. And I want us to start particularly praying for people who, in a specific situation or more generally, find it hard at the moment to lift that shield for themselves. So can I invite you all to stand? And if that sense of struggling to lift your shield really resonates with you, would you just raise your hand in your group? It's often something that we feel, perhaps we feel ashamed about, or we feel that there's condemnation or judgment because we should be able to lift our own shield. That's what God calls us to. But we'll all have seasons where we'll find it difficult, and there is no condemnation in Jesus. So this is a safe place that you can be supported, if that's your experience at the moment, specifically or generally. If not in your group, that's absolutely fine as well. And we can just pray for one another in general about our shields and what we've learned tonight. So if that does resonate with you, just raise your hand in your groups. If not, just gather around and pray for each other. Great, let's draw our prayers to a close. What we're going to do as we draw the evening to a close. So I'm going to invite you to gather in this front section, and we're just going to end with some more song worship. We often scatter around the room to get space to express our worship to God, but we're going to end tonight. When we were praying earlier as a leading team with Shaq and Julia, and I were praying earlier, and Julia was praying about unity. And it's great to be able to end together on a unified note, all singing and standing together.
Faithful one, so unchanged.